Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, or good night, whatever time of dimension that you are in. This is your host, Chris. Welcome to Interstellar Frequency. This transmission is made possible by Studio Stargazer Productions. This episode is a pretty special episode. It's done as a collaboration between me and the Front Porch. If you guys have not heard of it, I recommend you go and listen to Fred's Front Porch podcast. Fred and I ended up doing this episode together, collaborating on the circumstance of events on why I now have a show called Interstellar Frequency. So I advise you, if you ever get a chance, stop by over there and check out the sister show. Without further ado, let's jump right into this episode. Enjoy. When I was a little boy, I had a teacher who I feared and loved. I had respect for him, and I dreaded his disapproval. I was 9 years old when I met him, and I felt small and afraid. I couldn't read well at all. Numbers made little sense to me. I was embarrassed whenever I was asked to perform in front of others in any way. I frequently failed, and I could feel my classmates laughing silently at my efforts. I wanted to melt in my desk. Mr. Eater told us the very first day that he could be the nicest teacher we've ever had, unless we annoyed him. In that case, he would make Freddy Krueger look like Mary Poppins compared to him. That metamorph scared me to death. I imagine him approaching us with knives for fingers. He was our version of Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. And we thought we were pulling the wool over his eyes. When we whispered to one another about Mr. Hyde's behaviors, it turned out he had read the book. Who would have thought? He was generally gentle and caring with me, although there were students who did their best to make his fingers into blades. We used to tell them to knock it off, but as Commissioner Gordon learned, there are those who want to watch the world burn. I only saw Mr. Hyde twice. The first time was when I couldn't figure out an assignment we were doing. I apologized for being stupid. His eyes suddenly turned into flames.
Never. Let me hear you say that again. You are a human being. A cockroach is stupid. A frog is probably stupid. You are nothing of the kind. You're smart in ways that don't show up on a standardized test. So you've probably heard from lots of people that you're stupid. Those people are what we call wrong. And I won't listen to that nonsense. You may not understand numbers and letters, but I've seen you assemble things that leave the rest of us confused and perplexed. That's a much more valuable skill than the ability to spell, I promise you. You have potential you haven't been able to imagine yet. Just wait. I guarantee you'll find it when you're least looking for it.
The only other time he had frightened me occurred on one occasion. I tried to lie to him. Fred had a token economy. He was trying to teach us something that turned out to have little resemblance to reality. He wanted us to know that hard work paid off. He had tickets of varying colors, and each color was worth a different amount. It was unlike currency. If you answered a question, even if you were wrong, you got a ticket. If you turned in your homework, you got a ticket. If you were behaving when the kid next to you was being an asshole, you got a ticket. You could buy privileges with these tickets. There were cheap privileges like a potty pass, so you could leave to the room to go pee. And there were more expensive privileges like the I'm outta here card that allowed you to trade seats with another student. These were used to put you as close to your friends as possible. Lots of those cards were used to get positioned next to the popular kids. The most expensive card was Free Day. It gave you the whole day off. You had no work. You didn't need to do assignments. Your homework was canceled. You could sit all day on the computer. Or you could just read, or draw, or even sleep. It was a full day off, and you were allowed only one per quarter, if you could afford it. I never made all that many tickets. A free day was out of my price range, but I found one on the floor. It had obviously fallen out of another student's desk, but I felt like finders keepers. It was a legitimate way to look at it. When I wanted to use it, he gave me a look that melted me. He ran the store. He knew who bought what.
That's strange. I don't remember you buying one of these at store.
Well, I guess. You must have forgot.
Do you really think I would forget something like that?
Probably not.
Here's the problem with lying. Once you've done it, it's something that follows you for the rest of your life. It tells me, first, that you think I'm stupid. I really don't like to think I'm stupid, so that's not too cool. Second, it tells me that you might not tell me the truth when it really matters. Finally, if you continue to lie after you've been caught, it tells me I really can't trust you anymore. I don't think you want to teach me that, do you?
I just shook my head in shame. I had blown it.
We all make mistakes. It's part of being human. If we learn from them, we can avoid repeating them. You won't repeat this one, will you?
No, I won't. One last memory from those days, and I promise I'll get to the point. We learned and performed Hamlet one year. That was an amazing accomplishment for us. I wasn't only learning to read. I was learning to read Shakespeare. I got to play Marcellus, which was a small part, but I was proud. Nevertheless, one of the other people on the porch, my friend Robert Blunker, played the lead, and he actually memorized and performed all of the to be or not to be. It wasn't the kids' version of the script we did, but it was important to Robert to go above and beyond. When we took our bows, the audience rose to its feet and he came out for his curtain call. He makes a living today doing theater. Mr. Eager had tears in his eyes that night. At the end of the year, he thanked all of us for letting him make one of his dreams come true by performing Hamlet for him. I always like to remember that moment. Over the years, we kept in touch. I found him first on MySpace, when that was still a thing, and later on, Facebook. I also had several different phone numbers of his. He kept needing to change it. That was the way his life was going. I called him once a couple of years after I was no longer in his class, and I played some Beethoven for him, thinking he wouldn't know it. He had bought me Beethoven Violin Concerto because I fell in love with it in a Sherlock Holmes episode we watched called The Resident Patient. I was shocked that he recognized the Moonlight Sonata instantly. He always knew things I never thought he would. A couple years ago, Fred was coming out to California for a Sarah Nimitz concert, and I had hoped to join him there since we hadn't seen each other for so many years. But life happened, and I didn't get to do it. It was very disappointing. And then things became dramatically different. Last October, I was wandering through Facebook, and I saw an episode of Fred's Front Porch podcast called Do I Have to Hate All 70 Million? I was intrigued, so I listened to it. And when I was done, I felt like it was imperative I called him. Though he hadn't saved my number on his phone, he answered anyway. And I knew almost immediately something was wrong. This wasn't the strong, confident man I had known more than 20 years ago. He sounded small. He sounded a little afraid. He spoke more softly. His voice trembled a little. I didn't know what it was, but something was wrong. When I found out he was less than 20 miles from my house, I insisted on coming to see him. He said he would be glad to see me, but I would have to get the landlord's permission first. I thought that was strange, but I was very happy to comply. Fred gave me his number. He later got his ass chewed for doing that, and I called and texted, but got no response. I offered to pick up some Wiener Schnitzel on the way, knowing that he used to eat that frequently at lunch all those years ago. He thought it would be great. I had a lot of things to do that day, but I finally got around there around 4 p.m. Fred came to meet me at the gate, and he thought we could just eat on the opposite side of the fence, since he had no key to it. I noticed that there were several different locks and chains on it. That made me nervous. But I asked if it was alright to jump the fence. He said it was fine. Some of the dogs came out to see what was going on, but Fred settled them promptly. We went towards the little trailer in which he was living. I went in, and I was shocked by how tiny it was. There was a table, though, and I set the food there. And then I told him I wanted to get the drink I had left outside the fence. As I walked back, I noticed my surroundings a bit more. There was a jawbone of a dead animal in the yard, as well as more than a little trash. A quite few potbelly pigs. When I managed to get my drink over the fence, I turned to return, and I heard the cocking of a gun, and a man yell, "Get on the ground!" I saw him pointing a nasty gun at me. I declined to get on the ground because that would make it easier for him to execute me. and I wasn't really ready to die that day. I told him I was here to see my former teacher, Mr. Eater, and I was just getting my drink. I mean no harm nor disrespect to you or your family. I walked back to the trailer. There was no reply. I told Fred his landlord seemed like a nice guy, and he said he didn't know Tony had a gun. He'd never seen it. We both lost our appetite by this time. We went outside to vape. In a few minutes, Tony came back and asked if I was vaccinated and whether I had touched any of the dogs. I said I was vaccinated and I hadn't touched the dogs. He told me he had cameras, and now he knew I was like Fred, a fucking liar. My wife called and she asked if I was all right. I asked Tony to unlock the gate, and I apologized for upsetting anyone. That's an apology I can accept. He told me in an arrogant and condescending way. I left thinking that might well be the last time I would see Fred alive. I talked to my wife that night, and she said we had to keep him safe, whatever that took. Over the next week, we talked and texted frequently. He asked me to be on the lookout for a cheap place to rent nearby. He knew he was needing to leave. This was no longer the Fred I knew and loved. This was a scared little boy in the classroom. It was my turn to save him, just as he had helped save me. He got someone to rent him a place cheaply back in Arizona. He hired movers, and he asked if I could drive him to Phoenix. The bus would take the last of his money, and the ride to the bus station would cost more than the trip to Arizona. I was more than happy to help. I rearranged my work schedule, and I was there on moving day. The movers were hours late, and Anthony was getting more angry all the time. When they finally arrived, they grabbed a piece of furniture Fred had told them wasn't his, and Anthony started screaming at them. They refused to go back inside while he was there. Fred told them to get the bed out of the garage and into the truck, and we would leave the rest. He just wanted to escape. When we were ready to leave, Anthony had locked the gate. He stood outside of my truck yelling that Fred was a fucking liar, over and over again. I was on my headset with the sheriff's office letting them know we were being held hostage. Anthony finally unlocked the gate, and I could see Fred visibly relieved to get out of there. We spent the night at my house because I knew I could never make the drive that night. We talked with my wife until all hours of the morning, and then after about 3 hours of sleep, we got into the truck and I drove him home. It was fascinating to have all those hours to talk with my old teacher. He was still feeling small and broken, but he was much more relaxed. He began to find some happiness as we got closer and closer to Arizona. Sadly, all of the stress combined with the lack of needles he needed to take his Lantus wound him up in the hospital the day after I had left. I felt terrible, but Fred assured me over and over that I did nothing wrong. I had saved him just as he had saved me. Life comes full circle from time to time. You heard me talk about listening to that inner voice in one of my previous episodes. This was that time when I did. That voice kept telling me to call him after I heard that episode. If I hadn't, I wouldn't have this podcast. I didn't know whether Fred would still be alive. This is how the world works sometimes, isn't it?
I'm struck by the idea that more than a quarter of a century ago, he felt terrible about lying to me about a free day. At the end of October 2021, he gave me my freedom back. I was away from being called a liar over and over. I moved to where I could live alone and safe, and even have my own little dog. It's worth it to put love into the world. It comes back, sometimes many years later, to save your life. This is how we shine.
This is Interstellar Frequency. End of transmission.
Studio.